Hi, this is the 36th class of Derech Hashem, and we are starting the third section, first chapter. So the third section is called The Soul, Inspiration, and Prophecy. Thanks. And we have one live person in the class, and whoever else is listening by recording. Okay, so this is a very interesting section. We're going to learn a lot here, and this is something that's very important for Makarvot, for those who are involved in teaching, to understand well and to be able to teach. This happens to be, I mean, the whole book, of course, is important for us to know, and people are interested in learning, but this is something that the area of souls and souls' influences is something that the broader audience is very interested in and can be helpful in Kiruv to understand this well. Okay, starting from paragraph 1, chapter 1, section 3. As we have already discussed in 1.3.2, there is one way in which man is different from anything else that was created. He is a combination of two different, diverse elements, namely the body and the soul. When we speak of man's soul, however, we're actually speaking of two different things, so that's what we're going to go into now. One type of soul that man has is the same as that which exists in all living creatures. It is this animal soul that is responsible for man's natural feelings and intelligence. That's called the nefesh. So let's just look over here in the Hebrew for a second. V'inyan ha-nefesh hazo b'chol ba'alei ha-chayim hu mitziyot echad dak me'od. So this particular animal soul, so just see the language, nefesh, that's in all living things, all ba'alei ha-chayim. So we'll see that in Hebrew, what it's called. So just it's interesting to see dak me'od, how that's translated. This type of soul exists in all living creatures, and is a very ethereal entity. Oh, I think I skipped a sentence, right? Is this animal soul, going back up one paragraph, is this animal soul that is responsible for man's natural feelings and intelligence? So this is an important thing to think about. We're going to say this soul, this animating life force, I think is a better translation in this particular case, because we're talking about all living things, animals too. Animals don't have a neshama, but they have a nefesh. So that is what gives life to everything. So animating life force is a good way to translate this type of soul. But it's interesting to look at this type of soul and what it is responsible for in us, natural feelings and intelligence. So I think that's interesting in thinking about animals, like as a dog owner, or if I lived in Boulder, I forgot what they call them, dog shepherds. You can't own an animal. You can only guide them or whatever, care for them, animal care provider. Okay, so that's silliness. However, many people do see, I certainly see feelings in an animal that I recognize. And in dogs particularly, you can see embarrassment. You can see excitement. You can see loneliness. You can see mischievousness. You can see all kinds of different expressions on their face that we also have feelings and levels of intelligence in different animals, even among the same species. But, you know, there's stupid dogs and smart dogs, and I'm sure that's the same with cats. I just don't have experience with cats. I don't know about snakes. I haven't had enough experience with snakes to know if they're smart and stupid ones, if they have different personalities. But animals do have personalities, and they have feelings, and they have levels of intelligence, and we have that too. So some people mistakenly think, not Torah Jews, but some people mistakenly think that animals have souls. And I'll just, when one of our dogs was hit by a car, we had to have the dog put down. So the vet sent us, we were sad about it, and the vet sent us a condolence card. And the condolence card, now I knew this, Derech Hashem, I know animals don't have souls, but the condolence card talked about how our dog was had crossed the rainbow bridge and was waiting for us in the green pastures on the other side, and that when our time would come to cross the rainbow bridge, there would be our faithful dog waiting for us on the other side, and we'd be able to happily frolic again in the grassy fields over the rainbow bridge. So I read it and cried just because I was sad because I lost my dog, but I knew it's not true. Animals don't have souls. There's nothing eternal about them. When they die, they're dead. And they don't, nothing about them goes on to another place, and certainly nothing about them goes on to another place where they'll be able to greet us. That's not the case. But it could seem like that because we do share something with them. We do share feelings and intelligence, but we just need to understand that feelings and intelligence are in our animal animating life force. They're not in our neshama. So that aspect of us is very physical, not spiritual. Excuse me. So let's look at that next paragraph. This type of soul, that nefesh, the animating life force, also exists in all living creatures and is a very ethereal entity. So that's what we said in Mitziut Dak Me'od. It's transmitted through the genetic material at the time of conception and then continually spreads, constructing a body appropriate for each particular species. So let's hear that also. It's a different construct than what we're thinking of. It's not that the soul comes into the body. It is that the soul comes into the body, but it's not that the soul comes in and then just inhabits the whole body, but rather this animating life force that is transmitted with the genetic material is a causative agent. And it's, in a way, what drives the genetic material to expand, and then it fills it in, too. Do you have a thought about that? Yeah? Yeah, it's fascinating, right? Right, and looking at the language here, right? It's transmitted through the genetic material at the time of conception and then continually spreads, constructing a body appropriate for each particular species. So this is a very important philosophic concept that we have as Jews, that it's actually that the spiritual is causative of the physical. Mm-hmm. So here we're not even talking yet about the spiritual, because this is the animating life force, which is not spiritual. Well, we're going to see it. We'll see. But that it constructs the body appropriate for each species. So we have this animating life force that creates the body that's appropriate for each particular species. Hi, we're just... Okay. That creates the body that's appropriate for each particular species. And that's one reason why we have this concept of spiritual genetics, in a way, that the animating life force does inform the physical to create a physical that holds, that can be the right container for the spirituality that it needs to contain. We'll probably come back to that concept. I'll leave that right there, and we'll come back to reinforcing what I just said about creating the container that's appropriate for the spirituality. But meanwhile, we see that let's take from here, that the nefesh is that animating life force that is a causative agent that comes through. It's really actually physical. It's an ethereal entity, but it's actually the most ethereal of all physical things, which we'll see. As the creature matures, it continues to grow, meaning the nefesh continues to grow. And it is responsible for the existence of its senses, as well as the intelligence appropriate for the particular species. As a result of this, the intelligence of different animal species can vary greatly. The intellect of man, however, is very different from that of animals. All this is a result of the animal soul following its natural character, as well as the readiness of the instruments that serve it. These, in turn, vary with each individual species. In man's animal soul, certain attributes and faculties can also be distinguished. These include imagination, memory, intelligence, and will. All of these faculties are contained in this animal soul, each one having its own particular domain and unique function. So let's look back at that, right? So we said, for sure, feelings and intelligence are animal soul things, nefesh things. And then also imagination and memory. So imagination, that's pretty amazing for that to be in the animal soul, right? Yeah, rather than it's a spiritual entity, because that the ability to imagine something. But that imagination, just imagining the technology that we can come up with. That's all animal soul. That's not a soul thing. It's not a neshama thing. It's a nefesh thing. So we'll talk about the difference between nefesh and neshama. But that is a soul thing. Excuse me. So it's a nefesh thing. The ability to imagine new technology. I mean, just that's something that we as human beings have done since the dawn of time, whether it's imagining a wheel or imagining fire or imagining an iPhone or imagining a space voyage or imagining a player piano, you know,
so
how we create that.
And the way tied to the intelligence, mm-hmm. The more intelligent you are, I guess the more imaginative you can
be. Right. Yeah, I wonder how, clearly dogs imagine something because they dream. And you see them running in their dreams or barking in their dreams or even being a little scared in their dreams. So there's something there that has to do with imagination, because that's not a reality that they're living in. But it's very different. They don't imagine how to... They could figure out, right? They don't imagine how to get more food out of you. I don't think they sit around discussing, you know, like if we beg at the table and look super cute. Maybe she'll give us scraps on the table instead of waiting until they eat everything in the kitchen when she clears the plates, right? I don't think they think that way. But they certainly do. I mean, I see the two dogs, they talk to each other. They do communicate certain things. Like, you know, one dog, we got one dog after the other dog, and when the first dog taught the second dog how to paw on the door to be let in, like how to, like certain routine things. They do teach each other some stuff. There is some transference of information there. But there's not the imagination, not the scheming, you know, what human beings can do. Excuse me. And memory, too. They have memory. It's nothing like ours. You know, we got one dog from a shelter, and when we would go to pet him, he had clearly been abused. Excuse me. So if we'd pick up our hand on top of his head, he cowered. So if we pet him from the side, he was okay with that. But he thought he was going to be hit, and he cowered for, like, the first year pretty seriously every time we raised our hand to pet. So he clearly had a memory of abuse, of being hit. He was conditioned to remember it. He doesn't do it so much anymore. It's still there in the fiber of his being, but not so much anymore. But you'd think if he had memory, real memory, so he would remember we're not the ones who abused him, and we never hit. So if he could see us and associate with us the behavior that we have, why would he ever have to cower in front of us? But he still does, even after whatever we've had him, 6, 7 years. Excuse me. So their memory is different than ours. And then intelligence and will. So obviously different levels of intelligence, but we human beings have an intelligence that's clearly, qualitatively, completely different from other animals. And yes, there's other intelligent animals. You know, there's dolphins who speak to each other, and whales who are smart, and elephants who take care of each other. There's all kinds of interesting things going on in the animal world, but nothing, nothing like human intelligence. I mean, you can't compare it at all whatsoever. Nobody's created a code of transmitting information like we have in writing, and to be able to keep track of history. Like, that, you don't find any elephant documents or dolphin scrolls anywhere, or even anything like that where they can transmit the amount of information that we transmit. There's no dolphin microchips either. Like, I don't know what they transfer, but excuse me, I know it's nothing like us. And they can't build one generation onto the next like we do. So there's that type of intelligence. And then will, desire. You know, a dog's desire stays at, can I get more food out of her? You know, or can I chase a squirrel? Can I bark? Can I get free and run in the, you know, run out in the street and have a good time? They don't have the same kind of desire that we have. Can I leave a permanent imprint on this planet? Can I write a book? Can I change somebody's opinion? You know, we have very different desires. Okay. All of these are faculties contained in this animal soul, each one having its own particular domain and unique function. Okay. So that's first. That's the nephesh. Number two. In addition to all this, however, there is in man a much higher spiritual component, which is distinct from his animal soul and totally disassociated from it. This higher soul is placed in man only in order to give him a connection to the spiritual roots of creation, and it is this connection which allows man's deeds to exert great influence upon creation's roots. Also, through the agency of this higher soul, influences from above reach man from creation's spiritual roots. And from there, the influences are transmitted to man's animal soul, and from there to man's body. The higher soul is also meant to direct the lower one, to have the animal soul perform different functions on the higher soul's behalf throughout man's lifetime, according to the link that exists between the higher soul and creation's roots. I'll just finish this, and then we'll go back. The divine soul is joined to the animal soul, which is in turn joined to the most ethereal element of the blood. In this manner, man's body and his two souls are all bound together. Okay, let's look at this paragraph. Okay, so let's understand what's going on here. We have our physical body. We have then our animal soul, our animating life force, which is called a nefesh. And then we have our neshama. So three things: body, nefesh, neshama. So we have these three things that are bound together, and the way that the neshama is connected to the body is through the blood. So, well, the divine soul is connected to the animal soul. The animal soul, the nefesh, is then connected to the blood. That's why we see physically the reality that if you lose a lot of blood, you can no longer hold on to your life, right? Because the animating life force, which is connected to the blood, goes out with the blood because they're connected. We also see, it's interesting just to look at in the American Indian tradition, and I'm sure in some others too, but I'm aware of an American Indian tradition of drinking animal blood to receive life energy. My husband's an attorney for a kosher meat concern that shechted bison for a while, and they had a Native American worker. Most of the workers were Guatemalans, but one was Native American, and he asked permission to collect a cup of blood, because they have to spill the blood anyway. Sorry to turn your stomach. to collect a cup of blood and drink it. They gave him permission, and he did, and they said he was amazing. They saw the difference in him. He said for 2 weeks, the guy was like just zooming ahead, full of energy, full of life, so powerful, so energetic, you know, and that I don't know if he got to drink more later, but it was a huge thing. He wanted it as a Native American, specifically bison blood, because there's something holy about bison in Native American lore. But the point is that blood is a life-giving thing. It's interesting to look at some other religions. We don't hold this way at all, but there are some religions, some Christian sects, that don't permit blood transfusions, even for human beings, because they do believe that the soul resides in the blood and they can't transfer that from one to another, not allowed to go there. Again, not a Jewish thing. We should just be aware such a thing exists. That would be the J witnesses. We don't usually say the whole word J, just because we don't know how you pronounce Shem Hashem, if it's pronounced that way or not. So we just refer to them as the J witnesses, but they don't allow blood transfusion. So even if somebody's dying, no blood transfusion for them. And they wear bracelets that say no transfusions. And I think the medical world, for the most part, respects that, no transfusions. I don't know what the story is if a child needs one and if a parent withholds it, if that's permitted or not. But an adult is permitted to refuse a transfusion. But that would be based on these, it would be a, if that understanding of theirs is based on a bastardized understanding of our understanding that the soul and the blood are connected. So that's very clear. And it says in the Torah in different places not to eat the blood, and why not? Because the life of the being, and so you can't have it. Anyway, so we do understand that that animating life force is connected to the blood, and it's that animating life force that we call the nefesh, which is attached to the neshama. Now, the Derech Hashem here uses various words, and so we're going to just look at them. It's very confusing. The word nefesh and neshama are used interchangeably. And we know that neshama, which we're going to see soon, I'm not sure if that's here, neshama is divided into 5 different levels. That is a little bit later here. Yeah, it's in the end of this, in the middle. So I'll just give you the precursor to that, and we'll get to it when we get to it. But the neshama, the human neshama, is divided into 5 different levels. And those levels are nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. Really, if you want to look ahead in the text, just so you can see the words, look in paragraph number 4, the end of paragraph number 4. And you'll see those words there. See them? Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. So that's our human souls divided into those 5 parts. The reason why I'm bringing it now before we discuss those 5 parts is because we do have the confusion, for anybody who's aware of the fact that we call our neshama, neshama, and that it's divided into 5 parts, and that the lowest part is called nefesh. For that person, it can be very confusing to know that the animal soul is also called nefesh, but they're 2 different nefeshes. So you just have to know that. So the animal soul is called nefesh, and then the lowest part of the human soul is also called nefesh. And it's those 2 nefeshes that are connected, to each other, but they are 2 separate things. So just for the disambiguation of terminology, there's nefesh, animal soul, and nefesh, lowest level of the human neshama. But let's continue. Let's see what else is here I want to talk about. So what's the point of the neshama? Just back to paragraph 2 here. I want to just go over this sentence, these 2 sentences. The higher soul is placed in man only in order to give him a connection to the spiritual roots of creation, right? So our neshama is the connector. Think of it in a way as a tendril or a branch from the roots of creation right into us, goes into us. So that connects us to the highest, the spiritual roots of creation. So since we have that connection, it allows a 2 flow influence, a dual flow, right? So it's that connection which allows man's deeds to exert influence upon creation's roots. So it's that's the key of being a co-creator. Hashem is the creator of the world. He made us in his image, so we're co-creators. So we get to exert our creative influence on the world. How do we do it in a cosmic sense? It's through our soul, because our soul is connected to the roots of creation. So we can influence up through our soul to the roots of creation, although roots we usually think of as down, but in this case, spiritual roots are up. And the same way, those spiritual roots of creation then can, the second flow is they can come down. Hashem can send flows of energy through the roots of creation down into this world, and they come through our soul, through our neshama, into our nefesh, into our body, and we exert it into the world. So these two different flows, our flow going up, Hashem's flow coming down, are through the agency of the higher soul. So influences go in both directions, up and down, through the neshama. So that's the purpose of our soul while we're alive, is to receive and send influences. It's a transmitting device. But that's also the device that we, in essence, need to grow while we're here. So we'll speak about that. But let me just stop here and see if you have any questions. Do you have any questions on this paragraph here? Basically get that. Let's just see here. The higher soul is meant to direct the lower one and have the animal soul perform different functions on the higher soul's behalf, right? So the higher soul can't do anything. All it can do is cause an influence, right? So it has its own desire. So we talked about how desire is in the animal soul, right? But we also have desire in the neshama realm of the neshama soul is the spiritual desire to connect. That can't be in the animal soul. So in the animal soul can be the desire for friendship, the desire for food, the desire for acquisition of stuff, right? But the desire to connect to the divine is not in the animal soul. That's in the human soul. So, but the human soul can't do anything about it. It's powerless on its own. All it can do is take that desire and exert the influence downward to the animal soul, where the animal soul then feels the desire to connect. And then it will cause it to do different things. And depending on how we've learned to read the influence, we might, let's say, feel that desire, the desire to acquire mitzvot, the desire to strengthen ourselves spiritually. We might just feel that as a quest to acquire and go shopping. You know, there are people who do that. That's what they call retail therapy, right? If you're not feeling so great, what do? Go buy something, right? Instead of go do a mitzvah. Really, that's your soul saying, I'm lonely. Please add to me. Please feed me. I'm hungry. So it's very easy to buy a silk scarf when really what your soul wants is for you to visit somebody who's not feeling well or whatever it is. You know, that it's your soul is exerting an influence. I'm missing something. Please feed me. But depending on how we've trained ourselves to listen, we might just feel, give me chocolate, give me new clothes, give me a movie, give me whatever, you know, rather than what am I actually feeling? I'm feeling a soul yearning. Let me tend to that. But if we can feel it correctly, so it's exerting this influence down to the animal soul, which in turn is exerting its influence on our body, right? And hopefully if we hear it correctly, so then our body will respond and feed back into the system appropriately so that we're feeding our neshama correctly rather than distracting it from its goal by doing silly things. Okay, paragraph 3. As a result of this connection, whereby the divine soul is linked to the body through the animal soul, the divine soul becomes limited in certain respects. While in the body during a man's lifetime, the divine soul is prevented from joining together with spiritual and transcendental entities, being held back from association with them. Furthermore, while linked to the man's body, the divine soul is affected by what man does with his body, in that depending on man's deeds, the divine soul is either given to partake of the light of God or be turned away from it, becoming bound to creation's forces of corruption. It thus rests upon man himself whether his soul will partake of the perfection that God desires for it or be distanced from that perfection. It is the divine soul which is supposed to control man, directing and guiding the animal soul, forming in it mental images which are appropriate for it, initiating thoughts and desires according to the direction downwards which the divine soul inclines. So this is, I just had an interesting experience last week where one of my students who's been learning with me for years came and said she's all agitated about what's going on in the world. What should she do? Now, so it's a very interesting thing because this student has been learning, again, for 10 years with me and loves to learn and has been learning with many other teachers also, but is not Shomer Shabbos. So, and it's amazing to me that somebody can learn for so long and see so much truth and not take a step into really being Hashem's servant. So I, of course, as a teacher, I'm very patient, love to learn and learn with these students. But this particular student finally came to me, and she asked. Now, I don't push a student unless they ask, but she asked. So she said, I'm feeling so upset. I'm feeling so much agitation over what I feel like is going on. She actually heard Rabbi Ken Spiro speak, and he spoke about the end of days and the revelation of prophecy and what's going on today, and that really threw her. And she called me almost in an anxiety panic attack. How can she deal with all this information? And clearly, and she sees it so clearly that we are close to the end of days and Mashiach is coming, and what should she do? And she told me she's trying to take baby steps, and she keeps kosher, but just in the house, and she just decided to not eat non-kosher meat, but she's still eating vegetarian out in restaurants, and what could she do? So we made a meeting. And as we talked about it, I said, you know, there's a lot of different divisions that we Jews put on each other. You know, we have Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Secular, Religious, whatever we want. But Hashem really only gives us two labels, and that's Shomer Shabbos and not Shomer Shabbos. That's it. That's how he divides the Jews, really. Those who keep that sign of connection with him and those who don't. Excuse me. So I said, if you really feel like you want to get connected, I mean, your soul right now is crying. She said she's trying to take baby steps. I said, yeah, but you know what? Sometimes baby steps are not what you need. You know, you can't take babies. You can, but you can't take baby steps for 20 years. Like, if you need to be Shomer Shabbos, then it's probably time to, like, take some bigger steps into it. So, you know, she's telling me how she's thinking about selling her house at some point so she can move into the neighborhood so she'll be able to walk to the synagogue. So I said, really, what's stopping you from doing that now? Oh, her husband likes the house. It's really nice. So I said, you know, I don't know your financial position, but if you have the money to buy a second house, so buy an investment, you know, so you'll have a Shabbos house and you'll have a weekday house and you don't have to wait. Why should you be putting off for 5 years until retirement keeping Shabbos if that's a goal that you both have? So she hadn't thought of it that way. But anyway, once we finished with the whole long conversation, she said she is going to try to start keeping Shabbos more. And we talked about different ways she could step into Shabbos, you know, practice different parts, not all or nothing, and I showed her how I set up my lights and how I set up my blech and how I set up my kitchen and just how the house works for Shabbos, how I set up my week to do it. It's a lot of things I didn't realize. It's all these systems on how to make Shabbos work in your life, but we went through a lot of that stuff, and I gave her a few books to read. Anyway, she reported this week to the class that she had the most amazing experience this Shabbos. She was invited to somebody's house, where she got to sit with a Rosh Yeshiva, very famous from Israel, who was able to answer some serious questions she had. And I was thinking, you know, it's so amazing. And she fortunately was able to see that how her soul influenced her, she was hearing it, but she heard static because the physical was in the way. So she called her teacher, and we sat together, and she was able to tune in more clearly and hear it more clearly. Her soul was saying, please feed me. So she used her physical to answer the call and feed the soul more by stepping into Shabbos more, which opened up a whole world of possibilities for her spiritually, which allowed her then to come into contact with this prominent Rosh Yeshiva to be able to answer some questions that she had. Never would have happened if she didn't listen carefully to her soul, right? So when the soul speaks through the physical, we could choose to tune in or not. And when we tune in, whole new worlds open up. So that's what this is saying, right, is that whole worlds open up. It's completely up to us to tune into our soul or not, right? That's the second part of this paragraph. Let's see, where did that start? Right, it thus rests upon man himself, whether his soul will partake of the perfection that God desires for it or be distanced from that perfection. It is the divine soul which is supposed to control man, directing and guiding the animal soul, forming in it mental images. So that soul was busy forming in her mental images, which at first she was feeling so much anxiety over, but forming in it mental images which are appropriate for it, initiating thoughts and desires according to the direction towards which the divine soul inclines. So it's, we all have a divine soul, and it speaks to all of us, and it's completely up to us how we listen and how we integrate it and how we put it into our lives. And this is a vital point in teaching students, you know, that their whole entire future and their whole entire present 100% rests in their hands. No question about it, just like you were talking about earlier with your friend who has cancer, right? No question about it. You can't, of course, tell somebody who's going through chemo who doesn't believe in Hashem or that Hashem runs the world, just relax, Hashem's in charge. But if you know Hashem's in charge, you can put your hand, you can put your whole self in Hashem's hand, right? That's the last verse of Adon Olam, which is actually what I gave to this student as a mantra until we were able to meet, right? That last verse is B'yado Afkid Ruchi, right? So you know the Adon Olam, right? So that last verse is B'yado Afkid Ruchi, right? In His hand I place my soul. When I go to sleep and when I wake up, and with my soul also my body, Hashem is with me, I will not fear. Right, so that final, Hashem is with me, I will not fear, I use that as a mantra, taught it to my children when there's thunder or whatever. You could say that as a mantra, Hashem is with me, I will not fear. Doesn't mean it's not going to hurt. Doesn't mean it's not going to be hard, right? Now there's the storm in the east. Doesn't mean you don't have to evacuate your home. Doesn't mean that looters might not come in. I could totally see why you don't want to evacuate a whole town. You know, we used to live in Long Beach, Long Island, and that whole zone is mandatory evacuation. How scary to evacuate a whole town. You know somebody's not leaving, and you know that somebody who's not leaving can look through houses and take whatever they want because there's no preventing that while you're gone. So I could see staying in the basement. Let's just think, you know, whatever. But it's, if it's going to be a storm surge of 11 feet and it's going to be flooding, that whole island can be flooded. I mean, one side to the other, the whole thing can go. So you have to leave. But so it doesn't mean your house isn't going to get looted, and it doesn't mean you're not going to get sick, and it doesn't mean you're not going to die. But it does mean you don't have to be scared about it. You don't, because with your soul and with your body, you put it in Hashem's hands, and you know He totally guides everything. And this life is only temporary. It's all about how do we live in the zone where we grow our soul. That's it. Our marriages, our parenting, our education, our work, our life, our neighbors, our friends, our cars, our homes, our faces, our hair, everything is about how do I grow my soul. Everything. Any questions on that before I go on? Okay. Okay. Okay, so let's just look back still at paragraph 3. So at this concept, while in the body, so back at the top, almost at the top of the paragraph, while in the body, during man's lifetime, the divine soul is prevented from joining together with spiritual and transcendental entities, being held back from association with them. So let's just think about ourselves, right? We're body and soul together. Body completely physical, soul completely spiritual. If the soul would be able to unite with its kind, if we follow the rule of birds of a feather flock together, right? So souls go with spiritual things, body goes with physical things. That's what's so strange about us human beings is that we are spiritual and physical mixed into one creature. That can only work by divine decree that Hashem holds our soul in us, because really our soul should be repelled like a magnetic repulsion from our body. It shouldn't work. They shouldn't be able to go together. So really, soul should go with spiritual things and body should go with physical things. If that would happen, of course, our body would be dead and our soul would be where it needs to be. So what happened was Hashem put our soul in our body and then by divine decree made it so it can't unite with the spiritual forces that it's meant to unite with. Because if it did, we wouldn't have body and soul together. So there has to be a prevention of the association that's really the normal association. So that's what it's saying here. While in the body, during man's lifetime, the divine soul is prevented from joining together with spiritual and transcendental entities, being held back from association with them. And furthermore, while linked with the body, the soul is also affected by what the body does. So that's also interesting to think about. I mean, the soul is supposed to affect the body, but the body also affects the soul. And that's the way it's meant to be, is that the soul should be giving to the body, giving the influence, creating the desire, and then the body should respond by behaving in that way. If the body responds appropriately, hears the message correctly, and then responds by doing a mitzvah, so that when the body feels hunger of the soul, instead of shopping, the body calls somebody to see how they're feeling, or davens, or whatever it does to feed it spiritually. And I'm not saying there's never a need to shop. There is, but you know, if you could hear it correctly and feed it correctly, then that behavior, in turn, not just feeds the soul, but strengthens both the body and the soul, so that the soul is then strengthened through the fact that it was able to influence and cause its influence to be made manifest, and that feeds back into the soul. So that the body, the soul is influenced by the behavior of the body, and the converse is true too. Let's say the soul sends that signal, and the body doesn't behave accordingly. It behaves in a negative way, but the negative behavior of the body then hampers the soul's ability to send a message next time. So that's why it's for that reason that we have this principle of na'aseh v'nishma, I will do and I will hear, that the doing precedes the ability to hear. It's not until you start to live it that you could start to hear it. You have to do first, in order to hear it come down, you have to start doing it, behave in a certain way. And the actual behavior, the physical behavior of doing the mitzvot, is what creates the ability to hear the messages that are being sent. So, yeah, it is an amazing concept, right? So the physical creates the vessels for the hearing to happen. Okay, I think that explains that paragraph, basically. That then the body is what allows the soul to turn towards Hashem's light or be turned away from it. That the body has the power to create the environment in which the soul can exert or not exert its influences. Okay, paragraph 4. Oh, should I go to paragraph 4? Yeah, we'll do paragraph 4. That'll be it for today. It's kind of long. Yeah, okay. Even though this divine soul is often referred to as a single entity, it actually consists of a number of parts on different levels. We can therefore say that it is actually a number of souls bound together like links in a chain. Just as all these links comprise a single chain, so do all the levels of the soul constitute a single entity, which is called the divine soul. Each of these levels is bound to the one below it, until the lowest one is bound to the animal soul, which is in turn linked to the blood, as mentioned above. Okay, so just imagine 5 links in a chain. So just see what a chain looks like and how all the links. It is one chain, so it's one soul, but there's 5 links, and each one is interconnected. But it's also, if you hold from the top link and it drops to the bottom, there is a higher and a lower level within the one entity. So imagine that going forward. Okay, it's possible for some parts of these souls to remove themselves at various times and later return. It is also possible that levels add themselves to a person's soul and then leave. Okay, that's getting complicated. We'll go into that, though, but maybe next time. All this can happen with absolutely no visible effect at all on the body. These higher souls do not have any detectable influence on the body and do not add or subtract from man's vitality or sensations. The only function of these higher souls is with respect to man's true essence and appropriate association with the highest roots. This concept also includes the additional soul that arrives on Shabbos and leaves when Shabbos ends. Its coming and going is also not detectable in the body. The soul is thus divided into 5 parts. They are the nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. So let's look back to the beginning. So think of your 5-part, your 5-link chain. From the bottom link is called the nefesh. Then comes ruach. Then comes neshama. Then comes chaya, and then yechida. The whole thing, all 5 links together, are called neshama. So when we talk about our neshama, we use that one word to refer to all 5 together. But if we divide it out, then it's the middle link that's referred to specifically as neshama. The bottom is the nefesh. So let's look at that for just a minute. Nefesh, the word nefesh, like nofesh, means to rest. So in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, nofesh is a short vacation, where rest and rejuvenation. But nefesh is that part of the soul that rests up against the, like, the edge of your body, sort of. It's that part that sits in you. So it just rests there. The neshama is that, so the third level, the neshama, is that part of your soul that yearns for the connection with Hashem. And usually we can only seal up to that level. Chaya and Yechida, the upper two levels, we'll talk about soon, but let's just talk about the three lower ones first. So nefesh, that lower level, is what connects to your animal soul, the nefesh, but that's the part that's like, in a way, if you imagine it filling your body, you're resting up against the edge of your body. Neshama is like, imagine that above your head, sort of pulling you towards Hashem. And the ruach is the link that's in between those two. Ruach means wind, right? Wind is not stable. Wind blows around. So that middle link right there of the lower three mediates between the resting soul and the influencing neshama, the resting nefesh, and the part of your neshama that's called neshama that yearns for the higher. And ruach, your spirit, is what goes back and forth, mediating between the two, sort of bringing the message from the neshama down to the nefesh aspect, and the ruach brings it back and forth, vacillating between those two. So between the rest and the yearn. That's what the ruach does, is vacillate between the resting part and the yearning part of you. So that's usually what most of us can feel into, those three lower levels. The upper two levels of chaya and yechida, those are upper levels that we can't really feel. We do sometimes feel influences from them, but we don't actually feel up into those levels. It's beyond our capacity to really perceive. But those two levels, if you imagine, now imagine your five-link chain, those upper two levels are kind of like carabiner clips, right, that you can detach them in a way, and they can float away. They can float up to upper areas while we're sleeping. It's that part of our soul that leaves us, not our whole soul. Because if our whole soul would leave us while we're sleeping, we'd die. So, but a part of our soul does leave us while we're sleeping. We are considered, Kabbalistically, the Gemara talks about how we're considered 1/60th dead while we're asleep, and that's because part of our soul does leave us when we're sleeping. So it's those upper two parts, maybe, that can leave us, and we'll go into that further next time. But those are the ones, I think I'll just leave that as a concept, that they can leave and come back, because that's what this paragraph is talking about, right? It's possible for some parts of the soul to remove themselves at various times and later return. So not the bottom parts, but the top parts. It's also possible that levels add themselves to a person's soul. So imagine your five links, but you could add on a sixth. So we get a sixth link, an extra soul for Shabbos that comes and goes. At the end of Shabbos, it leaves. That's why we smell spices, to comfort the remaining soul over the departure of the extra soul that we got for Shabbos. So it comes and goes for Shabbos. But we can't tell by looking at somebody that they have their neshama yetera, that they have their extra soul. You know, we joke about how the neshama yetera is so hungry that we have to have seconds for a dessert on Shabbos, because, you know, so we see that we talk about how it's a joke that it makes us hungrier. But, in fact, it makes us spiritually, maybe not hungrier. The reason why we get it is because there's so much spirituality in Shabbos that we don't have enough of a tool. Our regular soul's not strong enough as a tool to absorb the spiritual light that's there in Shabbos. So we get an extra tool corresponding to the extra light that's there in Shabbos that helps us absorb the spiritual energy that's in Shabbos with that extra part of our soul. And then when Shabbos leaves and that spiritual energy is no longer available, so too the tool to absorb that energy leaves us. And there's other reasons why they might come and go. I'm not privy to all those reasons, but that's what the Ramchal is saying, is that these higher souls can come and go at different times. But the five basic levels are the five ones that we're generally dealing with the extra one for Shabbos. But you can't tell from looking at a person or viewing, or they don't influence directly the vitality of a person, their life energy. Although I would say, it's interesting, that being said, they don't add or subtract to a man's vitality or sensation. So you can't feel them. But those people who are spiritually honed, you can see an additional vitality in them, you know, an extra light from their face, an extra, maybe it might manifest as a bounce in their step, or there is an extra joie de vivre, you know, a simchas chaim, that a person has when they are more in touch with their neshama and they have a more neshama-led life. So in a way, it does affect your vitality when using the word vitality in that sense. When you're using the word vitality in terms of life energy, so what the Ramchal is saying is you can't, it doesn't affect your body, life force, those upper levels of souls, but the lower ones do. Anyway, so different parts of soul can come and go, but we have the main five parts. And again, the main five parts are the nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. I think we will pick up from there. Let's see, where will we be learning next week? We won't be learning next week. So the question is, will this class be on next week? And I'm not sure, so I'll have to email you about it if we are or not, because we have the WIC conference next week. So I just don't know if I'll be able, if I have the right time through flying and landing and being there. Probably not. Oh, so we'll just have to see. I'll have to look at my schedule and make sure. Okay, have a great week, and I look forward to seeing whoever's joining us at the WIC conference next week. Bye-bye.